This public radio podcast is supported by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services committed to environmentally sound, energy efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. And by Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
If you're lucky, your plane lands in Dubai at night. And then all you have to do is look out the window to understand the fundamental contradiction about this place. You see the long stripe of light in the darkness of the desert and the Persian Gulf. And right away you appreciate how far Dubai is from everywhere and how desperately it wants to be at the center of everything. From American Public Media and live from Dubai, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, working to help reduce greenhouse gases with 10 billion transit trips per year at publictransportation.org. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com.
From Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, the 10th of March, everybody. Marhaba, welcome. That, I should tell you, is about the extent of my Arabic. It's especially good to have you with us today as Marketplace continues its coverage of the Middle East at work. After a week in Cairo, we have come to a very different part of this region, from ancient and classical to modern, but still not quite defined. Riding in from the airport a week or so ago, it took me a while to get my bearings, because Dubai looks a little bit fake, like most of it wasn't here 10 years ago. That happens to be the truth, of course. The lights at night are mostly construction cranes. In the daylight, the line of new high-rises and office buildings disappears out into the desert haze. That is the manifestation of Dubai's ambition, a city that wants to be the most influential place in the Middle East, the hub for everything in this world that can be bought, made, or traded. If Dubai can do that, it'll change the way the Middle East works, from Cairo and Amman to Riyadh and Damascus. It could mean a Middle East that's competitive with the United States, maybe more collaborative, too. That ambition's a big one, but it's not an empty one if you know a little something about what Dubai used to be. The history of this city starts on the water, at Dubai Creek. Today, that creek is just a tiny slice of this economy, quaint almost, with the spice and gold souks nearby. A generation ago, it wasn't much more than a tidal flat poking inland from the Gulf, but it was the economy in a trading post that catered mostly to gold smugglers.
How much?
One. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
It costs one dirham, about 30 cents or so now, to cross the creek on little boats. They're called Abras. Think Disney bumper cars, only out on the water. And believe me when I tell you, it's crazy out there. Dozens of these things, 30 feet long, 6 or 7 feet wide, crashing the docks, hustling for passengers. And they are packed.
It's quicker.
Traffic's so bad in Dubai now, it's worth getting bounced around to save some time.
We have been catapulted to this modern world from really the Bronze Age.
Mohammed Goubash is the Secretary General of the UAE Human Rights Association.
If you were here 40 years ago, you would not have electricity or medical service or whatever.
It's really very impressive what they've done.
Rami Khoury runs the Isham Faraz Institute for Public Policy at the American University of Beirut.
It's really not very difficult because they have the money. They bring in the mostly Western engineers and architects from Europe, the U.S., and other places. And they bring in the Asian and some Arab laborers. And it's very easy to do.
And because of that, Dubai has been fundamentally changed. Yeah, we're in the Arab world, but forget about having to speak Arabic. I've been getting by just fine in English all week. Maybe some Urdu would have been helpful to talk to the Pakistani cab drivers. It's a weird sense of dislocation. Rami Khoury's analogy about Dubai goes something like this.
It's like a business center at an airport in Europe where people come from different places, they sit down, they have a meeting, and they go home.
For the locals stuck in the middle of it, though, the feeling is completely different.
We are the guinea pigs of this modernity.
Again, human rights advocate and Emirati native Mohammed Goubash.
A lot of what will happen here will either be emulated and the model is spread, or, you know, people will be discouraged.
When its oil and natural gas run out in a decade or so, all Dubai is going to have left is that modernity, that and its economic ambition. We're going to spend the rest of this week trying to figure out whether business really can change Dubai and the Middle East, and if it can, what that's going to mean for us. To find where we are on a map, first go to the really skinny part of the Persian Gulf, the Straits of Hormuz. Run your finger south, down the coast a bit. That's the UAE. There are seven emirates in all. Abu Dhabi and Dubai are the two you know. The other five you've probably never heard of. There are plus or minus 1.7 million people in Dubai. Most of them, the teachers and construction workers, aren't from here. They were imported to drive Dubai's growth. Best estimates are that only 15% of the population here is native-born. And if things keep going the way they are, that ratio could fall even lower. Marketplace's Stephen Beard introduces us now to Dubai's vanishing breed, the real Emiratis.
I'm in one of Dubai's palatial shopping malls, and there's a stall here that sells language teaching aids. Now, I've seen plenty of stalls of this kind in London, but nothing quite like this. There's everything here, from teach yourself Navajo to brush up your Luxembourgish. This is the most multinational city on earth. In this mall, you'll see people from maybe 150 countries. You'll also see the occasional Emirati citizen. You can't miss them. The men wear crisp white gowns called kandura, and the women are dressed in flowing black hooded cloaks called abayas. Emirati national Sorsan Fikri says this national dress is practically mandatory.
My people will reprimand me, they will look down upon me if I'm not wearing the national dress, because there are so few of us. And this is a kind of a survival technique where we have to reinforce it to each other.
Even though they're heavily outnumbered, Emiratis are reluctant to criticize the constant influx of foreigners. This, after all, is the basis of their prosperity. But doubts are beginning to creep in.
There is a lot of anxiety about the direction we're going in, and are we taking slow steps that are studied, or we're just jumping on the risks and saying, hey, let's build this place up.
This cartoon, created by Mohammed Harib, reflects the growing unease. It tells the story of four old Emirati ladies struggling to live a traditional life in the middle of booming Dubai. Mohammed Harib loves the boom, and he welcomes the foreign influx, but only up to a point. He began to have reservations when his idea for the cartoon was rejected by the foreign boss of a local TV company.
All the nationals working there love the idea, and they say, we just need to take it to the CEO. And then we end up going to the CEO, who's not from this country and who has been here just for 2 months. So he says, he looks at it and he says, why do I want to invest in a cartoon? And then it kind of dies there. So that affected, you know, my way of thinking.
He now believes that foreigners are too dominant in the cultural life of Dubai. Sociologist Rima Saban says many locals fret about their own shrinking identity and status.
They feel like they probably would disappear in this, it has been described as a tsunami, a people's tsunami. So they feel it, and they've been asking the government to do something about it.
Dubai has created a haven for property buying. No income tax, no capital gains tax, no VAT, no...
With ads like this, the government has lured in hundreds of thousands of foreigners to work, to play, to buy real estate. But Ruia Jawad of the HSBC Banking Group says the locals have been missing out. Foreign corporations here prefer to employ foreigners.
UAE nationals who don't have the experience would not be the preferred choice for the organizations to take on, as opposed to people we can get from outside in terms of experience and knowledge and exposure.
Emiratis don't have to work, and most of them don't. It's believed half of all citizens of working age are unemployed. They get generous welfare benefits, up to $5,000 each a month, and free housing. Many others do undemanding but highly paid jobs in the public sector. But the government is worried that foreigners now fill most of the key posts in private companies. It ordered certain key businesses, like banking and media, to recruit more locals. It set a quota of 40%, a vital measure, says Ruia Jawad.
If we do not move on and we don't try, we are going to be left behind. And sooner than later, we would realize that there's no place for us in our own country. It becomes very, very important for us to start developing ourselves, or we would be left behind.
The citizens of Dubai seem certain to shrink to an even smaller, albeit pampered, minority in the years ahead. That could be a problem if they are not playing a bigger role in their country's economic success. The sense of estrangement will surely grow. In Dubai, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You can get the lay of the land here by checking our interactive map. The Middle East at Work is online at marketplace.org. If you think about the real Emiratis as the broad top layer of the social and economic pyramid here, and the South Asian construction workers as being near the bottom, somewhere in the undefined middle are expatriate professionals, well-paid lawyers and consultants who come to Dubai for a couple of years at a time, usually with their families.
This is celery with yogurt, garlic, and some herbs.
There's an expat book club that gets together the first Wednesday of every month, women only. They meet at each other's houses. Last week it was in a neighborhood off the busy Al-Satwa Road near downtown. There's food, conversation, and company. The women are from Turkey and Yemen, Spain, Venezuela, and Afghanistan. Not a single Emirati in the group. The women say they'd like to get to know more locals, but that and other things here in Dubai are hard.
I would have to say, when I arrived 3 years ago, more than 3 years ago, actually, in the first 3 months you get that wow factor. Later, you start to discover things that are going on that are not really fair. As expats, we actually subsidize the local community by paying for more for electricity. They get water, electricity for free. We pay higher rates for that. We pay more for phone bills because they pay less. If you want to set up your own business as an expat, you pay much more.
By definition, it's a temporary place for expatriates. Because in other parts of the world, you get the chance to be assimilated by getting rights, by getting nationality. Here, that's not the case. There is no hope for any of us to become part of the country. Therefore, you will be here for a while and then have to leave if you want to give your children or in your family a sense of belonging anywhere.
And I really regret that in the school that the children don't learn more Arabic.
Yes. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And it's a pity, and they don't learn the culture, and so they are very feeling temporary.
To be fair, what our kids learn here, and that's one of the reasons we are here, it's the only place in the world where you can have that mix of nationalities. It's unbelievable the exposure they get.
It's really unique, as Marianella mentioned. Everything is happening too fast, too much, too big, too tall. I mean,
they think big.
The real estate is booming. The economy is booming. Yeah. It's really a place to be now, I think.
Yes,
we're witnessing something very unique, especially economically.
In 6 months we are here, I mean, just by chance. We sold our house. I mean, we made a lot of money on it, of course, in 6 months. It will never happen anywhere.
It will never happen, no.
Anywhere.
But also, you know, they're facing challenges now, and because from an expat perspective, yes, this is a place to be. It's very exciting. It's very happening. It's very unique. But prices are going up. Salaries are going up. Everything is going up so quickly that maintaining the model, it's a huge challenge right now.
We've got pictures of Marianella, Fulia, Gwen, Daha, and Warshma online at marketplace.org. They did eventually get to talking about their book, by the way. It's The Memory Keeper's Daughter this month by Kim Edwards.
And about those rising prices they mentioned, inflation in the UAE runs somewhere between 10 and 15%. They don't really publish reliable statistics here. Food prices are going up about 30% a year, and the government has noticed. It's imposed price controls on staples like eggs and milk. Coming up, inventing history one grain of sand at a time.
To Dubai, this is as grand as the pyramids were to Egyptians or the Taj Mahal was to Indians. This is Dubai's legacy.
But first, let's do the numbers. Everybody's feeling America's economic pain. Worries about a recession in the U.S. sent the Dow Industrials down 109 points today, more than 0.9%. Finished the day at 11,784. It also sent stock markets plunging all over the Middle East. Here in Dubai, the Financial Market General Index was basically flat, picked up just under 5 points, and it was one of the lucky ones. The Abu Dhabi securities market took a 27-point dive. That's about 0.6%, with Abu Dhabi National Energy, the Gulf's second biggest utility company, down more than 1%. Things weren't looking any better in other parts of the region. Egypt's CAC 30 index lost 14 points, 0.6%. Saudi Arabia fell 63 points, about 0.2%. Qatar's Doha securities market index toppled 106 points, losing about 1% of its value. The Kuwait Stock Exchange index dropped 44 points, 0.3%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 888-VANGUARD. Middle East reporting on Marketplace is supported by Constellation Energy, global provider of fuels, power, and energy services. Committed to sound, efficient, sustainable energy solutions. Constellation.com. And by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. Want more from Marketplace's special report, The Middle East at Work? It's all on our website. You'll find photos, narrated slideshows, video reports, an interactive map, staff blogs, music, and much more. Go to marketplace.org.
Before Dubai became the sparkling metropolis it is today, the region survived for hundreds of years on the pearl trade. Pearl diving was a mainstay of Dubai into the 20th century, but the thundering crash on Wall Street in 1929 put a stop to the conspicuous consumption of the era. Combine that with the pesky artificial pearl that was getting around, and divers were pretty much put out of business. Today, local museums tout the history of this industry gem. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. We are in Dubai this week, live from the United Arab Emirates. You know, it's funny how you can go halfway around the world and still feel like you never left home. Of course, you've got your Starbucks here and McDonald's. Kentucky Fried Chicken is very big, too. But fast food is small fry compared to what's on the way. Just this past week, Six Flags announced it'll be building a 5-million-square-foot amusement park here. Busch Gardens and SeaWorld are coming, too. If all that reminds you of a certain American city also built in the desert, well, join the club, says commentator and Arab media producer Jamal Dajani.
When I first saw Dubai from a distance, it reminded me of Las Vegas. Just like Vegas's shimmering chrome skyscrapers, everything in Dubai is so immense and so grand. Instead of casinos, there are burjs or towers. Burj Dubai, the tallest building in the world, is still under construction. Then you have Al Burj, Burj Al Arab, and so on. And just like Vegas, people go to Dubai in search of financial gain. Arab men in their gleaming white dish dashes, Europeans in business suits, Indians in traditional clothing, and women with their Gucci bags. They're all after one thing, money. Not everyone is happy with this new Babylon. More than 500,000 Saudis a year visit Dubai. They've invested billions of dollars in this tiny emirate, but resentment is brewing in the kingdom next door. Many Saudis believe that Dubai is a bad influence on their conservative society, a society where women cannot even drive stands in stark contrast to Dubai, where women in bikinis sun on the shores of man-made islands. Dubai has provided jobs and has brought in modernity into a desolate desert, but it remains a playground for the haves, particularly those who have oil. Most Arabs realize that their petrol bonanza will one day come to an end. Their future may lie in tourism, leisure, media, and banking, industries that keep Dubai light years ahead of the competition and an envy to its neighbors. Many wonder what impact this wealthy emirate will have. Will proceeds from skyrocketing oil prices filter to poor countries, or will it only benefit the few?
Jamal Dajani is the co-host of Arab Talk on KPOO Radio in San Francisco. He's also the director of Middle Eastern programming at Link TV. Sheikh Mohammed, the ruler of Dubai and the prime minister of the UAE, is just as worried about the Arabic language as Mr. Dajani is. There were big headlines in the papers here this morning. Yesterday, the sheikh and the cabinet decided it's going to be all Arabic all the time in federal offices from now on. Of course, those headlines were in English. We might be far away, but we are still plugged into the email system back home. Drop us a line about the Middle East at work. Our website is marketplace.org. For every headline announcing the tallest, biggest, most expensive thing on the planet that's being built here, and there are plenty of those, there is a backstory, the deep environmental cost of Dubai's building frenzy. Consider for a second that this is the land of indoor skiing and Olympic-sized swimming pools, and we're in the desert. It's where gas sells for a subsidized $1.70 a gallon. Ambition might be this city's most obvious attribute, but there aren't really the natural resources to back it up. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
Someone I met in Dubai put it this way. He said living here is like living in a place that hasn't yet had its official ribbon-cutting ceremony. Tens of thousands of construction cranes fill the Dubai skyline. They're building things at a dizzying pace. Really, really big things. The tallest skyscraper, a theme park twice the size of Disney World. But to see the most ambitious of these mega developments, you have to get in a boat and head about a mile out to sea.
This ship has brought a lot of sand from 40 kilometers north of Dubai, and it brings in all the sand in its hull, processes it, and throws it out here. What you're seeing over here is literally creating an island.
The development's marketing director, Adnan Dawood, calls it a $40 million patch of branded sand. It's one of 300 man-made islands that make up the world, an exclusive mega-development for the rich, shaped like the world map. This and the nearby Palm Islands have expanded Dubai's waterfront by nearly 600 miles.
To Dubai, this is as grand as the pyramids were to Egyptians or the Taj Mahal was to Indians. This is Dubai's legacy.
A legacy developers hope will put Dubai on the map as the world's premier tourism destination. But legacies can be a mixed blessing.
Unfortunately, the fast-paced development has not come at zero environmental costs.
Razan Al-Mubarak directs the environmental group Emirates Wildlife Society.
With the development was a lot of habitat loss. With development that are energy hungry, there's been an increase in energy use. With this type of development in a water-hungry part of the world, there's been an excess of usage of water.
Thanks to oil, Dubai and its neighbor Abu Dhabi are the two richest states in the United Arab Emirates. They also have the biggest ecological footprint, according to the World Wildlife Fund. People who live here consume more stuff and generate more trash than anywhere else on the planet. Even the United States comes in second. Water and power utilities are having a hard time keeping up. Khaled Awad heads the property development arm of the government-owned Abu Dhabi Future Energy Company.
There is a trend here for developments to consider that utilities are ready for them. Whenever they come up, they provide them with electricity and water as much as they want. And if you think of it, not only from an environment responsibility, from a basic sustainability point of view, and from a general sense of growth point of view, this is not possible.
especially with an estimated $2 trillion worth of real estate developments expected to come online within the next 10 to 15 years. But there is an alternative.
Imagine a place where the challenge of living in an extreme climate is overcome at no cost to the environment.
An hour's drive down the coast from Dubai, the Abu Dhabi government is pouring $22 billion into the world's first zero-carbon city. It's called Masdar, or The Source in Arabic. Once completed, this car-free city of 50,000 people will generate all of its energy needs from the sun, saving about $2 billion in oil costs over the next few decades. Samir Abu Zaid is the city's project manager.
This is certainly going to set the example. And this example, inshallah, will be successful. It will be copied elsewhere, whether it's in UAE or around the world.
That may be, but so far the green movement has been slow to take off. Changing hearts and minds isn't easy in a country where you can still gas up a Hummer for under $40. In the United Arab Emirates, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Those islands being developed off the coast of Dubai, the Palm, there are going to be three of those, and the World have to be seen to be believed. But we have got the next best thing on our website. Check out Sam's slideshow at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
It's not all work and no play here at Marketplace Middle East. We went out clubbing the other night just to get a taste of the cultural mashup that Dubai has become. We ran into Josie Adams, an English woman, at a Paris-themed bar in a fake Moroccan souk, raving about her Polynesian drink.
We just had a couple of tiki puka pukas in Trader Vic's. Would recommend. It's rum, and that's pretty much it, basically.
Dubai can be an acquired taste, probably just like that tikka puka puka thing can. Pakistani DJ Asif Sheikh spins Bollywood music on a Dubai radio station. He says he likes the cultural cocktail here just fine.
For example, if you talk about this bar right now, look at this place. It doesn't show Dubai culture. It shows to people from different nationalities and cultures who are coming here that, yes, you can come here and feel like home.
But sometimes there really is no place like home. As Lebanese banker George Sarkis puffed on a cigar, he told us a lot of his friends are starting to sour on Dubai.
Initially, you come here with a plan to try to save money, to make a living out of it. But if you spend a few years and you see that, no, on the contrary, everything that you're saving has to be paid on additional rent, additional cost of living, then, yeah, certain people are finding it difficult to survive at the end of the month.
Workers going home because it's too expensive to live here. Not a promising thing for a city counting on those workers to keep itself growing. That is Dubai, and that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Back in New York today, it was a fairly miserable day in the equities markets. The Dow Industrials tumbled 153 points, almost 1.25%. The NASDAQ tore off 43 points, a bit more than 1.9%. The S&P 500 trimmed 20 points, 1.5% there. I wonder how you say recession in Arabic. Anyone? The Dubai Financial Market General Index picked up almost 5 points, less than 0.1%. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Jennifer Collins, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Coming up next time, as we continue our coverage of the Middle East at work, hard work and tough living for Dubai's migrant workers.
They feel like they're being treated the same way as animals are being treated. This is life is very, very hard here.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow as we continue live from Dubai.
وسائل الإعلام الأمريكية.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.